Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Anthony Tennyson, CEO of Solvonis Therapeutics. Welcome back to the podcast, Anthony.
Hey, good to speak to you both today, guys. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. So we obviously saw the recent news that the company's appointed global industry leader, Paul Carter, as non-executive director, effective today. Carter brings nearly 30 years of experience from senior roles, including EVP and chief commercial officer at Gilead Sciences, where he managed operations across 38 markets, generating over $30 billion annually. He currently chairs Clinigen Group, Mimo Therapeutics, and Kirin International, and serves as NED at Immatics. His appointment bolsters Solvonis' board as it advances its CNS pipeline and executes its capital-efficient licensing-first growth strategy across addiction, psychiatry, and neurology. So with this appointment of Paul Carter, a former Gilead executive with extensive international experience, how do you see his addition influencing the company's strategic direction and growth potential in CNS therapeutics, Anthony?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, we're deeply grateful for someone of Paul's caliber and experience agreeing to join our company. What it means for us is it means three things, really. It's a great validation for what we're doing as a company in seeking to address and provide hope for individuals suffering within high-burden CNS disorders. And what we mean by that is those are diseases that affect many people. So have, from a commercial basis, have large addressable markets, but from a societal and a patient basis, I mean, there are many, many people who are suffering. And the other definition for a large or high burden disease is the fact that there's very few, if any, viable treatments available. So what we're doing as a company, with the help of, you know, our leading team, with our science led by Professor David Nutt, is we are seeking to innovate in those high burden diseases to, as I always say, is to provide hope for the individuals, families and communities who are being so poorly served by the pharma industry. And so what this means is it's a real validation that Paul has joined our board. Like Paul is on many boards and could be on any other board in the world, but it's a real validation for what we're doing, both from an innovation perspective, but also from a patient basis. The second thing that it means is, you know, with Paul's experience in commercial, on the commercial side of the pharma industry, and specifically around scaling products in market, but also on a licensing basis, it means that we really have one of the leaders in the industry on our board now to help advise us on our stated preferred pathway, which is to build an out license. But if we do decide to bring something into market ourselves, we've got the guy that's been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, particularly in Gilead, where, as you mentioned, Phil, he was chief commercial officer for Gilead from a very early stage to a mature stage. So he grew a company from a biotech company to being a pharma company at a very, very large scale. And I think the third thing that that means is when you look at the bench that we now have to deploy, in the fact that we've got science led by world leader Professor David Nutt, we've got our chairman in Dennis Purcell, who is a capital markets guru when it comes to the biopharma industry. And now we've got Paul Carter, who is a commercial guru in the biopharmaceutical industry. And we've also got Dr. Renata Chrome, who is a deep, deep expert in bringing things from preclinic, so that's before human, into human and into market. We really have now got all the chess pieces in place.
Yeah, from the aces in places,
and from a leadership team for us to really kick on now and do something quite special, we believe, and therefore create value for shareholders and should be of interest to investors.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we've seen this emphasis on capital efficient licensing first model under the new board structure. And as CEO, how do you plan to leverage this and approach to kind of accelerate the value creation while maintaining a good financial discipline?
Well, I think what we've got on our very clear focus on those high burden CNS disorders across the three strategic pillars that we're operating in of addiction, psychiatry, and now exploring opportunities within neurology. Those are high burden, as I said before, and that means the state across the three core areas that we intend to operate or conduct our research and development, which is the U.K., and we've had great success in collaborating with the state in the U.K., but also now the EU and the U.S. So there's great interest within the state and the funding bodies that provide non-dilutive financing, so grant financing, for companies to innovate, to help support companies innovating, to develop more effective treatments for the diseases within those three pillars. And so that's what our intent is with the team we now have, the focus where we are focused is to seek to continue to seek to access non-dilutive financing or grant financing in the research areas that we're conducting. So I think your audience is probably well aware now at this stage that our lead program focused on severe alcohol use disorder, which is a massive, massive unmet need. We have had a great success in support from the UK state, both in the phase two program, which was run by the University of Exeter, which was 100% funded by the Medical Research Council, and the phase three program, which again has been run by the University of Exeter, which we're co-investing in, but we're co-investing with the UK Department of Health, and it's been run in the NHS. So now what we want to do is, with the team that we have and the focus that we have, is to seek if we can replicate that approach across other disease classes and other territories. And so that's really what I mean about being capital efficient, is seeking where we can access non-dilutive financing as much as possible so that we can execute our build and out-license approach whilst also having a really, really strict focus on capital deployment. And then on top of that, I'm not going to die, we have a very lean, small team. I am both the chief executive, but I am also the chief bottle washer. I am the coffee maker, and there are many times where I sweep the floor.
Very good. Anthony, so Paul Carter, it was Awaken. So it seems like you've accumulated now the Awaken people all in one place all over again.
I would say that we are building the A team. We're a small cap CNS biotech focused across addiction, psychiatry, and urology. And with that licensing first, build and out licensing first approach, we are bringing along some of the people whom I've met on my journey, who I think and believe strongly can enable us as a company to achieve that goal. So as I mentioned before, Dennis, yes, Dennis was an advisor to me, but regardless of whether or not Dennis had been an advisor to me before in a previous company, Dennis is one of the leading experts globally in capital markets for biopharma. Paul is one of the leading global experts in commercialization for biopharma. Renata's new to Sylvonus, and she is a leading expert in preclinical and translation into clinic and actually bringing things to market. She was responsible for bringing Tamiflu from preclinical to clinic and into market for Roche, where it ultimately achieved, I think, $2 to $3 billion peak revenue. Dave, obviously, Dave has been on the journey with us for quite a while as well.
Okay, so if I was to ask you to paint the picture of SV1, SV2, SV14 over the next 1 to 2 years, how do you see all of that progressing?
Okay, SVN1 targeting severe alcohol use disorder for the UK and the EU market. Next 2 years would bring us to, it's very depressing, that would bring us to the end of 2027, and I'll be 2 years older and have less hair. But that program.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Yeah, well, for your audience.
You lose a bit of the beard.
Yeah. Well, that's why I have a face for radio, right?
You'd have to shave, I think.
So that trial would hopefully be closing completion, or would be nearing completion, I should say, sorry, with data analysis ongoing, with the planning underway for a marketing authorization application in the UK. But hopefully, given our focus on licensing, we would have out-licensed that program by that stage, if not earlier, and we would be earning milestones payments with the potential for a future royalty revenue stream. For 002, we
just
would.
On that, just let me
Yes.
stop you just 1 second. If you get it out licensed, are those timelines going to quicken up or not?
Without being too glib on it, that may well be someone else's problem, right? It would sit with someone else who would most likely have a bigger balance sheet. They would specialize in getting things done at the speed that they want things done at, rather than a small biotech who has to operate at the speed at which their balance sheet enables them to operate at.
Okay, so that was a yes. Okay, SVN002.
SVN002, I would hope what we are doing right now for that program is so the reason that we're running two different programs for alcohol use disorder is the 001 program takes it potentially takes advantage of being able to apply for something called a mixed full application. And in the UK and EU, you can do that where you can reference data in the literature and your own clinical data, and you can file all of that, and you get 8 to 10 years protection, your own data. So anyone else who wants to go and apply for the same indication with the same type of medicine can't reference into your data. And so that provides you with 8 to 10 years exclusivity for your own data, meaning someone else has to go and run, in our case, their own phase two and their own phase three trial, which is unlikely to happen, we believe. That type of regulatory data protection is not available in the US. And if you go down a 505B2, or sorry, if you were to just do what we were doing and to apply for a mixed full application in the US, we would most likely only have 1 year's data, regulatory data protection, which would not be sufficient to enable us or someone else to build a market leading position. So what we need in the US is we need something with a better IP position because that regulatory data protection doesn't exist. So we've in-licensed a program from a German pharma company who are repurposing esketamine or J&J Spravato, which is a nasal spray for the treatment of treatment-resistant depression, which is already a blockbuster drug. We've in-licensed that. They've repurposed that from a nasal spray into an oral thin film for buccal, which is on the cheek, and sublingual, obviously sublingual delivery. Helpfully, they have filed formulation patents, and we've also tested that product in people suffering with harmful drinking, and that's enabled us to generate the data to file method of use patents. We've had a meeting with the agency in the US, the FDA, and they agree we can do something called 505B2, so we can cross-reference into J&J's preclinical package once we establish a bridge, scientific bridge. So all of that means that under a 505B2, you can get 3 to 3.5 years regulatory data protection. If your patents are recognized in something called the Orange Book, it's an idiosyncrasy in the US, it means you can potentially extend that regulatory data protection out to 5 to 5.5 years. And that's attractive for the very large US market. And then it becomes attractive from an out-licensing basis, again, sticking with what our plan is to efficiently deploy capital, to progress research to a certain point, and then to out-license it. So all of that as sort of the context, we would hope within the next 2 years, we would have the bridge established. We're working on that right now with WuXi in China, because it's very efficient, again, capital efficiency, to do that work in China. And so what we have to do is we have to confirm that plus or minus the profile is the same, going sublingually, buccally, compared to going intranasally. Once we have that bridge established, our intention will then be to submit something called an IND, initial new drug file, to the FDA. And within that will be a clinical trial application, a CTA, for a phase 2B program or study, I should say, because the agency very helpfully, when we met with them in December of 24, said they, in their opinion, there's no further human data required before going into phase 2B. Now, back to one of the core strategic purposes of the business, capital efficiency. That means we do not need to incur the costs of the preclinical program because we will be cross-referencing into J&J. We plan to cross-reference into J&J's Spravato preclinical package. We don't need to conduct phase one because the German company that we in-licensed the asset from have already completed phase one, and the agency have agreed we can go straight into phase 2B. So from a CapEx efficiency basis, that's pretty unheard of. That's a couple of $100 million we haven't had to spend. And it means you'll have a phase 2B, hopefully ongoing. And in 2 years' time, I would hope we would either be very near or have completed that phase 2B program. And then that becomes quite an interesting asset to have a conversation with. Because when you look at the US market for moderate to severe alcohol use disorder, there's about 29 million people with alcohol use disorder in the US, according to the government. Of those, about 16 million suffer with moderate to severe alcohol use disorder. In the US, there are about 15,000 clinics currently registered with the US government for the treatment of alcohol use disorder. So if your listeners look at the sales curve for J&J Spravato and how that ramped up, no one in the US had done what Spravato had done with regard to the treatment of treatment-resistant depression. So they had to do a whole amount of education, a whole go-to-market strategy. They had to build the market up because it was a new treatment paradigm for that disease. We're pointing into something with that suffer with a much larger addressable market, with a market that is much more established, as in the distribution channels that are much more established. So we think that would be potentially interesting to other companies to bring forward. And the other thing that's very important is we're designing this to follow the same the CPT codes. So in the US, everything is about reinsurance, or not reinsurance, sorry, insurance and reimbursement. And if you can't get reimbursement, you're not going anywhere. It's almost like in the UK, you have to have NICE approval to be used in the NHS, because the NHS controls 90% of the market. If you don't have NICE approval, your drug's not going anywhere. So we're designing 002 to follow behind, or to use, to be suitable, to be reimbursed using the same CPT or reimbursement codes as J&J Spravato. So everything we're designing here is for something that will be accepted by the payers in the largest healthcare market in the US for a disease that affects many millions of people.
Surely someone like Johnson and Johnson are going to want to buy this anyway. Why would they want to do all the work and then not benefit from this?
We have not begun any commercial discussions around the O2 program. There is a value inflection point that occurs after phase 2B. And I think what we as a team and a board, now with Paul and Dennis and Renata, who know their potatoes, know whatever analogy we want to use, right? We will decide when is the appropriate time to have those conversations.
Okay, so moving on to SVN.
SDN-14. So the reason that, and just to explain to people, once we have a lead candidate identified, we'll change the name of that program. So SVN-001, it's racemic ketamine being repurposed with therapy to treat severe alcohol use disorder. SVN-002, S-ketamine being repurposed into an oral thin film plus digital psychosocial support for the treatment of moderate to severe alcohol use disorder in the US. SVN, SDN, serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline, 1-4, is currently a series. We have four candidates that are looking promising for the treatment of trauma-related mental health disorders, specifically PTSD. Those four candidates, and I think we've gone from 200 candidates, we're now down to four. Those four candidates are currently in Verona in Italy with Evotec, going through the final tests that we would hope at some stage in the near term, depends upon the speed at which Verona or Evotec are moving at, that we will have a lead candidate identified for the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. What we want to do is we want to elicit pro-social responses. So if you can get a compound that releases serotonin, a little bit less dopamine, and considerably less noradrenaline, what you can do is you can dampen down the fight or flight response, you can boost the empathy response, and that then enables people to more effectively engage in therapy, to enable people to go through, relive, and examine and be more comfortable with the traumatic events that have led to them developing post-traumatic stress disorder. The reason that that's so important is, yes, there are a lot of people who develop post-traumatic stress disorder on the battlefield, but actually most people who suffer with PTSD, unfortunately, have developed PTSD due to sexual abuse and other forms of abuse during their childhood, teenager, other formative years. And when, as a currently, the way the PTSD is treated is it's either treated with SSRIs, so selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, where you essentially dampen down all emotions, or it's done through therapy. And during the therapy, and you know this, Kev, because we've spoken about this before, right? Is as you try and get someone to become more comfortable with the trauma, they have to relive it. And many times the body reacts in exactly the same way. You can imagine having to repeatedly relive being sexually abused. That's not something that you really want to do.
No, it's not pleasant. I mean, as I said to you, what we discussed before was a thing called human givens, which was basically where you used therapy to actually, in inverted commas, hypnotize people, and then they went through that situation, but they were looking at it in second party or third party. So you were basically tricking the brain into you watching it happening, and then you were watching yourself watching it happen. And this ultimately dampened the effect of it, which you are adding a drug element to that now as well as the therapy, which I think would be excellent, you know, because basically you're calming people down and letting them experience it so then they can get rid of it. Yeah, not completely, but you are dampening the whole thing down. So therefore this post-traumatic stress disorder, which is basically just repeating living the hell, if you like, just stops being such an emotional drag on yourself and becomes less and less and less as time goes by. So I can see that will work perfectly, to be honest with you. I really do, I think.
It has worked. So there's a company called Lycos, formerly called MAPS. I think they've changed their name to Resilience now, I think. But they are using MDMA, so, you know, ecstasy, MDMA, plus therapy to treat PTSD. They had phenomenal results. They completed the full preclinical phase 1, phase 2s, phase 3 programs. They cured PTSD for an acceptable cohort of people suffering with it. They applied for marketing authorization or regulatory approval in the US. And they were turned down because there was some irregularities in their R&D approach, and there were some ethical issues as well. They will most likely have to go and redo another phase 3, and they're in the process of raising money to do it. But so this concept of an MDMA, for your audience, is a serotonin, dopamine, and noradrenaline releaser. The issue that we believe exists with MDMA is there's a reputational issue. There's also a health issue because MDMA metabolizes into MDA, which has a bit of a heart issue. But also then from a health economics basis, 8 hours in clinic with two sets of therapists, it's expensive and clunky to commercialize, we believe. And we know this because in a way can we ran some clinics and we tried to do some of this stuff. So what we have done with SVN, SDN14, it's a series, all of which are designed as soft drugs. And that's not a criminal definition. Soft drug is it gets metabolized quicker in the blood. So that therefore reduces the time that you're in experience, but therefore makes it more efficient potentially in the healthcare setting. Lower use of real estate assets, human assets and time. It also completely novel scaffolds, so novel compounds, so better IP position, and also a better health, lower intensity, so lower abuse potential, and doesn't get metabolized into NDA, so it's a better safety profile. So we think we're onto something quite interesting in that regard. And this also provides us with optionality because there are many other mental health disorders that are trauma related, generalized anxiety disorder, etc. So there's we think that's an interesting asset class. And then just to sort of
When someone takes the medicine, then effectively then they're going online to have the therapy at a similar time or not?
No, this would be as an adjunct to psychotherapy. This would be in a licensed clinic with therapists. And what we would be looking to do is we would be looking to deliver an entactogenic experience, which has been proven to enable people to engage much more effectively in therapy, but in the time window more associated with ketamine, which is about 90 minutes, as opposed to with MDMA, that's 8 hours.
Okay, so it doesn't last as long, basically. Yeah.
And that's enabled by the soft drug design because it metabolizes quicker and it's lower intensity.
Okay, so if we move on to the supporters of Sylvanus, this gentleman keeps popping up, this Michael Lehmans and his people. Mm-hmm. So explain a bit more, and when are you having lunch with Donald Trump?
Michael and his fund and his investors have been great supporters of the company. Initially, they were investors in Awaken. Why were they investors in Awaken? Well, again, they are purpose and mission-driven people. And the purpose of Awaken was to, as it provide hope for the individuals, families, and communities suffering with alcohol use disorder. And there are not many people in the US whose lives have not been directly or indirectly affected by alcohol use disorder. And they have continued to support us and support Sylvanus now, again, because they are mission-driven people, and they are even more supportive as we branch out into psychiatry and as we explore opportunities in neurology, that we will be hoping and looking forward to keeping your teams or your audience updated on as we progress. They are individuals who I aspire to having, who I would aspire to be. They are these things called ultra high net worth individuals.
One day, Anthony.
There aren't many of those in Ireland, but there are many more of those in the US. And they're very, very good people is the only way I can describe them, or is the best way I can describe them. And each year there is a holiday party. So the Americans, they don't call Christmas Christmas, they call it the holidays. But so there's a dinner in Florida annually. And over the last number of years, that's been in Mar-a-Lago. I was there 2 years ago, and then we were invited back, but I couldn't go last year because my real boss, my wife, had something else planned for us that weekend because it was in and around my birthday. But my former CFO in Awaken, Jonathan Held, went. And this year, myself and Dennis Purcell, my chairman, are going to Mar-a-Lago for a sit-down dinner. I can't guarantee the big man will be there, but if the big man is there, my grandma is from the next parish over from his golf club to the west of Ireland in Doonbeg. So I will be telling him, and you know, look, he has his, you know, people have their opinions on him. He's probably like Marmite, right? But in the defense of the Trump family, the people in Doonbeg speak very highly of him. There are a number of teenagers there whose college fees, university fees, have been paid by the Trump organization, the golf club, whatever. So yes, he is like Marmite, and yes, he is not for everyone, but I will, if I can meet him and if I can mention the name Salvonus to him and implant it in his or his circles consciousness, I will certainly do that because there ain't no harm.
Yeah, he's a staunch non-drinker, isn't he? He doesn't drink at all.
Correct.
But he also sees, I saw a conversation that he had with one of the YouTube guys, and, you know, he was saying, you know, it really does wreck your life, the whole alcohol side of things. So, yeah, I mean, going for alcohol, depression, and PTSD, it's like the trinity almost of things that we can have happen to us or alternatively cause ourselves in whatever way you want to look at it.
I think you just mentioned something there in depression. I think that's what's really interesting about our approach, right? We also have the rest of our drug discovery program ongoing, where we are modulating the serotonin, dopamine, and noradrenaline receptors, right? So with the PTSD one, the SVN-14, where we produced a serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline releasers. There's other things that one can try and do with the serotonin, dopamine, and noradrenaline receptors, both, you know, release, for encouraging them to release to a greater or lesser extent, or to block the reabsorption. And so we are doing some we're running some interesting science as we modulate, seek to modulate those receptors. And we think we're working on some interesting things, which we hope will enable us to broaden and go deeper across those three pillars.
Yeah, and I suppose in a world that we're now living in, I think these things are only going to get more and more severe. Maybe not necessarily be alcohol. It could well be drugs. It could be all sorts of things. But we've got a whole group of people who've grown up with social media and different things that have affected people's brains in a way that we have no idea how that's impacted.
And I think pharma are awake to this now. Neuroscience, you know, yes, absolutely. Neurodegeneration, Parkinson's, etc. That's always been pharma's radar and capital deployment plan. But mental health and addiction, psychiatry and addiction, that came off the radar for 20 or 30 years ago. But now it is coming back. And I've probably said this before to your audience, is CNS, neurology, psychiatry, addiction, that is where a lot of money is now being deployed by pharma. Big, big money is being deployed into that. Like last January, there was a couple of $10 billion plus deals. And just a couple of weeks ago, a peer company of ours, Gilgamesh, they had their lead program, not the company, the lead program, bought for $1.2 billion by Otsuka. So this is a hot space right now. So not only is it a burning issue for society and for healthcare systems, but pharma is now waking back up to the to CNS and certainly across our three pillars of addiction, psychiatry, and neurology as being hot areas for acquisition and for growth.
Indeed. So what can we expect next as my last question?
I think, you know, it's as I've messaged the street before or the market before. One, we are working to on an out-licensing model for that. For 002, it's about establishing the bridge. And once the bridge is established, it's to submitting an IND with the CTA for a phase 2B with the FDA, and it's executing that program. For 1-4, it's about identifying a lead and declaring a lead and moving that program from SVN-SDN-1-4 to SVN-014. And then there are other things that we are continuing to work on in the drug discovery space as well. So we will not be short of news over the next 3, 6, 9, 12, 16 months.
Very good. Why did you say 16 months?
I was trying to do my maths. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15 months. 15 doesn't really sound very good, does it?
Sorry. I thought something specifically large was going to happen.
No, I was moving 16. From quarters to half to halves.
Yeah, indeed.
Quarter years to half years.
Okay, great. Okay, well, it's been great speaking to you. I think people need to click into the fact that all of these things are going to be required. I definitely like the alcohol thing. I mean, and we've had amazing results, and hopefully they will be sort of rubber stamped with what you're doing at the minute. The depression side of things, I think, is one of those things that, you know, it's worked quite obviously with the Johnson & Johnson thing. So I don't see that you've got huge amounts of risk in terms of it. And from my own personal experience, the PTSD thing works with, if you have the person calm enough, works without a drug. But I think will work more effective with a drug for people, especially as you said, a huge amount of the people have had sexual issues in the past. And that's not something I dealt with. It was just fears of things and things that had happened in their lives. So yeah, good luck. And we look forward to speaking to you over the next 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24 months.
Good stuff. Listen, thanks very much. Good to talk to you guys. Take care.
All the best.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.